भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 10 Canto Chapter 38, Akrura's Arrival in Vrindavan. Text number
9. Dasyami nunam sukapo lanasikam. Dasyami nunam sukapo lanasikam. Svitava lokaruna kanjalochanam Smitava lokaruna kanjalochanam Mukam mukundasya gudala kavitam Mukam mukundasya gudala kavitam Pradakshinam me pracharanti vai mriga. Pradakshinam me pracharanti vai mriga. Drashyami nunam sukapola nasikam. Smitavalokaruna kanjalochanam. Mukam mukundasya gudala kavritam Pradakshinam me pracharanti vai mriga
Certain.
Su,
beautiful.
Kapola,
whose cheeks.
Nasikam,
and nose.
Smita,
smiling.
Avaloka,
the glances.
Aruna,
reddish.
Tanja,
lotus like.
Lochanam,
the eyes.
Mukam,
the face.
Mukundasya
of Lord Krishna.
Huda,
twisting.
Alaka,
with hair.
Avritam,
frame.
Pradakshinam,
clockwise
circumambulation.
Me,
of me.
Pracharanti,
are performing.
Why,
indeed.
Mika,
the deer.
Translation.
Surely I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda, since the deer are now walking past me on my right.
Their face, framed by his curly hair, is beautiful by his attractive cheeks and nose,
his smiling glances and his reddish lotus eyes.
Purport by Srimad Krishna Prabhupada.
Akrura saw an auspicious omen, the passing of the deer on his right, and thus felt sure he would see the Supreme Lord Krishna.
I'll read the next one too.
Apyajya Vishnu Manujatvam Iyuso Bharavatara Yabhuvo Nichechaya Lavanyadamno Bhavito Balambanam Mayamna Nasyat Phalam Anjasadrisa.
I'm going to see the Supreme Lord Vishnu, the reservoir of all beauty, who by his own sweet will has now assumed a human-like form to relieve the earth of her burden. Thus there is no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of their existence.
Namo Om Vishnudaya Krishna Prasapne Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Picharine Nivise Sasanyavali Prasichare Shatanya.
it is very instructive to actually analyze or understand mood that Kura had on his way to Vrindavan. Although he was sent there by Kamsa with some ulterior motive, Kamsa sent him to Vrindavan to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura so that he can arrange for them to be killed. Yet Akrura, he took the opportunity that, oh, I'll have a great opportunity. Whatever the reason may be, but a great opportunity to see Krishna. At first he was lamenting. He said, what great fortune. What have I done to have achieved this great fortune? And that is actually our position. Most of the time, we do not appreciate this fact or understand or fully appreciate where we are coming from. Therefore, we tend to take things for granted. If we actually take some time during the day, some moments during the day to reflect on where we are coming from and where we are at, we will be struck with great wonder. Isn't it? If he was not, Sri Prabhupada, he was a resident of Vrindavan. Normally, when someone retires in Vrindavan, they never want to leave. Now, in fact, even Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami, when he came to Vrindavan, resided in Vrindavan, he took a while never to leave Vrindavan. And Emperor Akbar, he heard of his eloquence, his great devotion, invited him to his palace for discussion. And Jiva Goswami, he didn't want to go. But then he relented because Emperor Akbar sent his personal chariot to receive him. So he accepted the offer. And he went to meet the king, the emperor, in his palace and had discussion. So when he came back, he wrote some slokas glorifying Emperor Akbar that he was actually a great Vaishnava, even though he was a Muslim king. So see, usually the residents of Vrindavan do not want to leave. There was one time I was told, because when you leave the body in Vrindavan, you guarantee to go back home back to God. Someone told me there was this one old lady, she was dying in Vrindavan, and passerby wanted to take her to Mathura or to the hospital, and she said, was screaming, no, no, she was hanging, grabbing anything she could grab hold of, so that to prevent them taking her away. She just wanted to die right there on the roadside in the dust of Vrindavan. So such people, they have that great understanding. But Prabhupada, he left Vrindavan to fulfill to carry out the order of his spiritual master, to bring great fortune unto us. As he was leaving Vrindavan on the boat, he was praying. First he had his heart attack, and then he was praying that now the sea seems to be pretty calm, but I'm feeling great separation from Vrindavan. When he was in New York, he was saying that even though I may be in a great city, one of the most important city of the world, New York, a very magnificent city, yet I'm feeling separation from Vrindavan. And in another purport, in the part of perfection, Prabhupada wrote that even though I'm in this city of New York, I'm feeling great separation from Vrindavan. Vrindavan is very special because Krishna appeared in Vrindavan. He said, even though I may be sitting here in a New York apartment, but actually I'm not away from Vrindavan because I'm always thinking of Krishna. But because I'm thinking of Krishna, it doesn't matter where I am, it's still Vrindavan. I think that was Lord Nityananda, or was it Advaita Acharya, was telling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that wherever you go is Vrindavan, because you carry Krishna with you. So wherever Krishna is, it's Vrindavan. So one of the most amazing things that Prabhupada did, he created Vrindavan everywhere he goes. He opened so many temples around the world, and he created a mood of Vrindavan. Because basically, what is Vrindavan? Is it just a piece of land or dust? Vrindavan is always the mood of devotion to Krishna. The most mood of devotional service, the mood of surrender to Krishna. That's actually the mood. Like Keshava Prabhu was saying yesterday, it's not just by purchasing a ticket you come to Vrindavan. A lot of people come to Vrindavan and they do not see Vrindavan. And especially nowadays, I used to go there every year for many years. And after a separation of 9 years, I went there last year and was pretty shocked by what I see and what I saw. It has become so commercialized. In front of the Krishna Bharam temple, so many shops and so many activities and so many noises and all that. And if one do not go to Vrindavan in the right mood, he will get disturbed. I remember many years back, I brought a number of devotees from Denmark to Vrindavan. And one of these devotees, he was complaining all the time. He was complaining and practically offensive to the Brajavasi. Because he was not coming there in with the right mood. And he was so disturbed by the Rishavalas trying to cheat him out of a few rupees. You can imagine, out of a few rupees, how much is that? A few cents or less than a dollar, and you commit offenses against the inhabitants of Braja. He was disturbed by the monkeys, the boars, the mud, the shopkeepers trying to cheat him. He was disturbed by everything around him. Because he was not able to enter into the mood of Vrindavan, he was so disturbed and was getting, and I was avoiding his association because every time I see him, he was complaining. And I don't want to get involved in his offenses and all that. So that's the thing. This actually Vrindavan is covered. You say like, what do you call it? It's covered by layer. Then most people when they come, they see this external. They aren't able to enter into the mood of Vrindavan unless you have the right attitude. So you see, so this is actually a lesson from Akrura. He was feeling that great fortune. He said, actually, I do not really qualify, but by great fortune, I have this opportunity to go to Vrindavan and see Krishna. And he was looking forward to it. Actually, that is the mood. There is the mood taught by Rupa Goswami also. Rupa Goswami was, in his prayer, was saying that I'm so fallen. There is no hope for me. But yet, I'm hoping against hope that I'll get the mercy of Krishna. So this is our mood. If we actually examine our position, our situation, and we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of all these great devotees, how much devotion they have for the Lord, we think, man, we have a long way to go. What chances do we have? And we can lament, actually, if we examine our situation, we do not have any chance. But yet, in the mood of Rupa Goswami, we can pray, yet I'm hoping against hope that I'll get the mercy of Krishna. All we can do is can still hope, and we still can still endeavor. And because of the mercy of a Sri Prabhupada that he brought, in fact, Prabhupada, when he was preaching, while he was preaching in the West, he was always thinking of Krishna and Vrindavan. And somehow, after some years of preaching, Krishna arranged for him to go back to Vrindavan. And he revealed, it was written in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, he revealed that he was speaking to Dwagadish, the deity in Los Angeles. He said, you took me away from Vrindavan, I'm happily preaching here, and now you're dragging me back to Vrindavan. And Prabhupada revealed that, yes, Krishna said, yeah, yes, I took you away from Vrindavan because I want you to go and preach in the West. But I took you away, but now arrange for you to come back in a way, even better situation. And Prabhupada said, yes, brought me back, and now you see we have a temple even 100 times better. So you see from this also that when we endeavor to surrender to Krishna, we never the loser. We never the loser. Actually from this book, Your Ever Well Wisher, written by one Matiji, relating the different pastimes of Prabhupada when he was in Vrindavan as a Grihastha, and also after he took sannyas before he came to the West. Prabhupada was already always absorbed in this mood. Even sometimes during the festival, he was staying rather down with the temple, and this festival is going on. Prabhupada will be in his room. He will come out, just take a little prasadam, and then go back to his room. He never just come out just socializing and all that. He was always absorbed in his mood. One time, one Babaji was staying right next, right in the temple, next to the Radha Damodar temple. And he was saying that in the night, used to be this someone just howling and crying. And he was wondering, who is this person? But he said, I was too lazy to get up and find out. But he went on. And then one day his curiosity got the better of him. He woke up and he climbed over the wall and he saw. He said, Prabhupada, or Abhay, that he was known at the time. He was cleaning the courtyard in the Rupa Goswami Samadhi in Bhajan Kutir, in the back there. He was cleaning and crying at the same time, crying for the mercy of Rupa Goswami. So if you've been to Vrindavan, you see in Prabhupada's room, where you take prasadam, his kitchen, he's looking out the window to the courtyard where Rupa Goswami Samadhi and Bhajan Kutir is, and that's where he got his inspiration. And yet, when you have such association with the Goswami's Vrindavan, why do you want to go anyway? So see the sacrifice that Prabhupada made when he left. Recently I was reading a transcription of a lecture from Radhanath Swami. He was telling he met Vrindavan Chandra, the son of Prabhupada, and was asking him actually when Prabhupada left, who was there? When Prabhupada left on the Jaladuta, there was only his son and a few acquaintances. People whom he don't even know very well. Just some acquaintance. And Prabhupada's son was there to send him off. Can you imagine someone who's just about to embark on a great mission? Just like now we have Muni Chara going back to New Zealand. What a great send-off, isn't it? And then Prabhupada was going to a huge worldwide mission and there were just a few people on the boat. And then Radhanath Swami was asking his son, he said, how do you feel at that moment? And he said, I was feeling so proud of my father. That at that age he was going to the West to preach the mission, the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he said, but he never imagined that he would come back with such success. He thought he would just go there, preach to a few people, and then we'll come back. But he could not imagine what Prabhupada did. So, this, again back to this mood of Akrura, although he was lamenting, but at the same time he was appreciating. He was appreciating so much his great fortune. So on his way to Vrindavan, he was meditating on Krishna. He was meditating on Krishna. And if we actually analyze this and try to reflect also, we are also on a journey. We are all also on a journey. Our journey is also to Vrindavan. That's what we are doing here. We are taking up devotional service because our goal is to go back to Vrindavan. Go back to Krishna. Go back to the spiritual world. So we are also on a journey to Vrindavan. And we have to look, what is our mood? What is our meditation? Sometimes that journey may seem to be pretty difficult. Just like Akrura also, he has to get up early in the morning to start his journey on a chariot. I don't know how it's like, but I cannot imagine it to be very comfortable. Riding on a chariot with horses standing there for so many hours. I remember some many years back, I went to Jaipur, and we went out to see this fort just on the outskirts of the city, this fort out up in the hill. So I was with another devotee, and we had a choice to go on a scooter or go on an elephant ride. And we thought, we have never been on an elephant ride, so why don't we take an elephant ride? That was one of the big mistakes we made. It was so slow and so uncomfortable. Going up that hill there, it took so long. By the time I reached there, I had a heat stroke in the hot sun sitting on the... So imagine sometimes you think, wow, this great king is sitting on this elephant ride and sitting on this chair. Actually, it's so uncomfortable. And it was just about maybe an hour ride or something to go up there. And it practically took a whole day for a crew run. By the time he arrived in Vrindavan, it was dusk. But he was not disturbed by the journey or anything, because the whole journey was just absorbed. He was so eager. He was filled with enthusiasm and eagerness to see Krishna. And at the same time, thinking of the great fortune and meditating on Krishna's lotus face. And this is actually one of the most important quality in devotional service. Usahan nishadaya. Usahan, enthusiasm. One should be very enthusiastic. Sometimes we may be morose, depressed. But actually, there's no reason for us to be unenthusiastic at any moment or any time. If we just, anytime we feel an enthusiasm, we just look at our life, where we come from and where we are at now, we should be filled with enthusiasm. Because when we look at the great fortune we are holding in our hand, we should be, the only feeling we should have is enthusiasm. Because just the opportunity to engage in some service to Krishna is such great fortune. We sing in the morning when we read the deities. Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevamanam Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Thousands and thousands of Lakshmi in the spiritual world, they are offering service to Krishna. It is not when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Savadaman Vrijaja, Mamikam Sharanam Raja, just give up all kinds of religions, just surrender to me, Manmana Bhamak Bhakto, become my devotee. It's not like he's advertising in the Herald Sun, up, position open. We are short of a coke or whatever, you know. We have seen so many devotees have performed important services, they leave and somehow the service always gets filled. Krishna always arranged my services to be taken care of. And the Lakshmi, goddesses of fortune, are serving. It's not like there's the dust in the spiritual world that need to be cleaned. Even the dust of Chintamani. You know, it's not that it needs any cleaning, and you know, it's like after crossfire we close up, we need a big cleanup. It's not like that. But yet they want to clean, make it shiner. Make it even cleaner, make it shine even more for the pleasure of Krishna, because they're so eager to serve, offer. That is the mood of Vrindavan. Always wanting to serve, always engaged in service for the pleasure of Krishna. So, when we have service, when we engage in service, we should not be lamenting, oh, this service, that service, I want to do this, I want to do that. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? We should feel our great fortune. What pious activities have I performed in my previous life that I have this opportunity to render some service to Krishna? What great benediction! When I was reading this book about the the wife of what's that, the Maharaj name in from Scotland? His Loksanyas, his wife died from cancer. Balabhadra Maharaj, yeah. His wife, he was revealing in the book how she was, even before he left her body, she was entering to the presence of Krishna. And he was asking, what were you doing? And she was just smiling, you know, in a very childish way. He said, I'm just a gopi. I was holding something for Mother Yashoda. That was her service. It's a very, very simple service. Just holding something, assisting Mother Yashoda in the service of Krishna. And she was in such bliss. But how often we ask, when you ask to do some simple service, me? Ask the bhakta. Ask someone else. Well, why me? Ask me, clean this. Sometimes we think we are so advanced that we are not, it's too below us to do some simple menial service. Actually, that's the mood is you should be enthusiastic. Whatever service. And be eager. Always very eager to be in contact with Krishna. To be always eager to chant the holy name of the Lord, eager to have darshan of the deities, eager for anything that is related to Krishna consciousness. You should be eager. That is the prayer. In so many prayers by the acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, on one hand they may be lamenting, but at the same time the eagerness is there to receive the mercy of Krishna. Layam. Layam Lala Samayi. These songs by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That Layam has to be there. That intense greed, intense eagerness. Now they say that one cannot achieve this love of Godhead even by performing pious activities for thousands and thousands of years. Or thousands and thousands of lifetimes. But if it's available in the marketplace, one should be so eager and greedy to get it that you should be willing to pay any price. Any price. No bargaining. Huh? No bargaining. Whatever price you want, pay. Sometimes our mentality, you want things cheap. You want shortcuts. You want a bargain. Shortcut, but no. By the time you're haggling over the prices, someone else would have taken it. Because it's such a rare commodity. How rare it is, how many billion of people in this world? Or more than 6 billion people in the world. And how many are engaged in devotional service? And how many million of people in Melbourne? More than 3 million people. And most of them probably still sleeping. And here we are sitting here enthusiastically hearing the pastimes of Krishna. How fortunate. This is real great fortune. So we have to see ourselves on the journey, just as Akura is on his journey to Vrindavan. We are on the journey, and here we are absorbed in devotional service, absorbing Krishna consciousness. We will not be at all disturbed by our surroundings because our consciousness is somewhere else. But as long as we are not absorbing Krishna, we absorb in this body, and the body is a temple of suffering. And of course we will feel the pangs of the three modes of material nature. Why are we sometimes frustrated? Because we have some desire that are not fulfilled, so we become frustrated, and it leads to anger. And when we contemplate on the objects of the senses, lust develop, attachment to enjoy those objects become manifest, and when we cannot fulfill those, we become angry, we become frustrated, become angry, the mind become bewildered, intelligence become lost. So why, if we are not happy in devotional service, why? We ask ourselves why. Krishna says, susukam katum avyayam. Devotional service is joyfully performed. Why am I not happy? Why am I not feeling satisfied? Maybe because I'm not performing I'm not absorbed in devotional service. I've allowed some crack in my consciousness for Maya to creep in. And as Keshava Guru was saying yesterday, when we are full on in our devotional service, you can be sure Maya will send some tests. There will be some tests. There will always be tests. There will be so many tests. Some small tests, sometimes some big tests. Just show, test how sincere we are and how determined we are, that how determined we want Krishna. So all these checking things are, all these things are there. If we understand what Krishna consciousness is all about, then we can understand. If I'm not feeling satisfied, if I'm feeling disturbed, it's nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Sometimes people that blame Krishna consciousness for their problem, because they don't understand. I remember this one in the very, very early day, there was one devotee. He was really enthusiastic, he was full on and enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness and everything. Then one day he became very sick. He became very, very sick. And he started complaining. Say, I surrender my life to Krishna, I chant how many rounds a day, I do so much devotional service, and then I'm still sick. Krishna is not taking care. And he left. So this is very foolish. So it's not that we cannot boil Krishna consciousness down to like just a formula. Everything about the spiritual is sentient. There's a personal touch to it. It's not just a formula. It's not something that, you know. Sometimes we think, oh, I've chanted 16 rounds for how many years and how many months and weeks and days, and I greeted the deities how many times, I've done devotional service how many hours, and then why am I not getting love of Godhead? Very often we read it's costless devotional service. Costless mercy. It's costless. Krishna's mercy is costless. And yet it's also unlimited. So therefore we praying, we are hoping against hope. I may not be qualified, but yet. That's why we are dependent on two. Sadhana bhakti, and at the same time we also praying for Kripa. Siddhi. We're praying for Kripa. We follow the process of sadhana bhakti, but at the same time we're also hoping that we'll get some special mercy, some extra mercy. You know, if we just, even if we look at it, if we just only depend on sadhana, we're not going to get very far. All the rigid procedures that are there involved in sadhana bhakti, therefore it's a combination, we also pray for Kripa. And every time there's some opportunity to get some extra kripa, we grab it. When there's a sadhu around, grab. You know? Like a dog at the door of Vaishnava. Bhaktivinoda sing his song. What is it? Kukura Achara? He said, let me be a dog at the door of a Vaishnava. And the dog is praying, let me serve you. I will not disturb you, but if someone comes and disturbs your bark, and I'll chase him away. And just let me be at the door, serving you. So the eagerness, again, you see, the eagerness is there for service. Doesn't matter what position you may put me in, as long as I have this opportunity to engage in devotional service to the Vaishnava, to Krishna. So the eagerness, so every opportunity we have to get some extra Kripa, we grab it. We should prepare ourselves, our mind, our consciousness in that way. Whereas sometimes we engage in our service, and we are so fixed, this is my service, and then some opportunity comes along to do some extra service or something else, something different, some Kripa, and then say, nope, I'm this. You know? We should be open. We should allow our heart to be open to receive. We pray every day for the mercy, but the problem is we have certain expectation. Krishna, I want your mercy, but I expect it to come this way, this way, this way, this way. But Krishna is not our servant. We are Krishna's servant. We cannot demand from Krishna that you have to give it this way, this way, this way. So we pray for mercy, and when the mercy comes, we are not ready to receive it. What was that? And then it went by, you know. What was that? I expect it to be this way. But very often it comes in most unexpected way. The mercy comes in a very unexpected way. And we have to be open to receive it. We just accept, okay, Krishna's mercy is coming this way. So Krishna's mercy can come in the form of a lotus, or it can come in the form of a club. You want mercy? Okay, very good. Bam! Wake up! Yeah. Or it can come in the form of someone just coming and saying something to us, and we may get upset. So if our conscience is not, we are not in the right consciousness, we get upset. And we get disturbed. There's an interesting story that Indra Dumna Swami was telling. I was reading this his diary, one of the later entry. He was telling during the Polish tour, he was so much anxiety because the skinheads, the Christian church were giving so much trouble, and they were planning to attack and all these things. So it was a lot of anxiety. And then there was this one bus driver. This bus driver was giving a lot of trouble. He was a real character. So one time they were traveling to another place, and he was in the back, in the car. They were in a chain of cars, and the bus was in the front. He was complaining, "This driver is driving too slow. He's going to cause an accident. There's so many cars in the back. He's holding up." He said, "I got to talk to him. Maybe I'm going to sack him." So when they arrived at the place, he saw the bus driver stomping out of the bus and walking away. So he came up and asked the devotee, he said, "What happened? Where did he go?" He said, "Wow, this driver, his name was Anthony. He had an argument with one of the devotees and he just stomped off angrily. And the worst thing is that he has a key to the storage and we cannot unload all the equipment." So when Maharaj thought, "I really got to talk to him." So when he came back, Maharaj called him and said, I want to talk to you." And the driver said, "I want to talk to you too." And Maharaj said, "Okay, let him talk first, then I have more reason to sack him. Can get on his case." And this driver was saying that, "You know, I don't like all your theater performances. And I don't like all these dances from Bali. And Mara's thinking, "Okay, go on. And I don't even like your food." And Mara said, "Let me tell you something." I was going to say. And he said, "But I have to say one thing. I love your chanting." You know? "I love when you speak and I love your chanting. When you chant this mantra, something happened in my heart." And immediately Maharaj mood changed. He said, "Okay, go on." He said, "You know I have a very difficult nature. But as you say in your lecture, but beyond this external nature, we have a spiritual nature." You know? And then he took out his wallet. He said, I have this photo of Marie. My mother gave it to me when I was a little boy, and on the back of there was some prayer written in Polish. And I kept it. This is my most precious gift. My mother gave it to me when I was a child. And every day I pray to this picture." You know? And then Maharaj's heart was changed, you know, and then this driver asked him, he said, "So what do you want to say to me?" And Maharaj said, "It doesn't matter." So then on the last day of the festival, and Maharaj was just getting ready for the final kirtan, one devotee came up to him and said, "This Anthony has a gift for you." And he offered him. And he said, "But this is his most valuable possession." Yeah, that's what he said. He said, "I want you to give him a precious gift, my most valuable possession." And that was this photo.
that he's been keeping since he was a child. And Maharaj was so touched by it. So during the kirtan and all that, so during the kirtan, then he saw Anthony coming up front, sitting in the front row, and had his eyes closed, rocking his head, and the tears was flowing from his eyes. And the kirtan was going on. And after the kirtan, maybe before the kirtan actually, before the kirtan, Maharaj was announcing that this is the last kirtan, and we're doing this kirtan in honor of our bus driver, our best bus driver that I ever had, Anthony. So after the kirtan, invited him to come, and he was very shy, he didn't want to come, and then all the crowds started cheering, you know, and then finally slowly he came up. And Maharaj was saying that, you know, this Anthony, he's my best friend, he offered me the most valuable gift, the most priceless gift I've ever received in my life. So I have a gift for him. And then he gave the present to Anthony, opened up, and it was a CD player. And a CD of all the recording, all the bhajans during the festival. And he was so touched, and Anthony was so touched, he was crying, and he embraced Maharaj and kissed him on both cheeks. So you see sometimes that, you know, of course Maharaj in a humble way, he was also relating how Krishna was showing him through this bus driver, which he thought was such a nonsense, rascal, get on his case, you know. So very often when we deal with people, sometimes it's a reflection also of our own heart. We get frustrated. When things, we want things done in a certain way and it's not done, and you get frustrated and you get angry, we get upset. And we forget that the other person is also an individual. They also see things in different ways. So we have to learn to adjust, and we have to be open that Krishna can show us, can teach us in so many different ways. And he can also bestow his mercy to us in so many different ways. And we have to prepare our consciences to receive that. So, and any questions or comments? Mahamahaprabhu, you always have some last sentence to wind up the class. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.